It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Good morning.
Yeah, beat me to it.
Good morning.
Good girl.
Boy, I don't know how you did that. Laurie, what's going on? Are you okay? Because
you
said we have
shining.
A moment, a breather.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I wanted to wish the world at large a good morning. It's a lovely day here in Pinehurst, North Carolina, before my husband butted in and told me that we didn't own a Buick.
We never
That's
owned
a
Buick.
How are you, Hezzy?
Well, you never know. There might be one in your future, John. You never can tell.
Well, that'd be okay. That would be okay.
That would be just fine. But today we're not going to talk about Buick. Instead, we're going to talk about the truck that Johnny drove exclusively this week because I was in New Hampshire visiting with Winston, my son, who is not here with us today to talk cars because his truck just broke down. So he's on the mend with that. And so as a result, Johnny had the pleasure of driving a
Chevrolet 2019 Silverado four-wheel drive LT DBL. I think that means double cab. But
That's what I thought too, but I wasn't sure.
Well, here is the big thing. It was, you know what the color is? Red hot.
Red.
My very favorite.
I like that.
I got to drive a big red truck for a week.
Before we get going on the truck, I want to say something. Can I say something? Because it's probably all I'll say throughout the whole show.
Oh, right.
Okay,
you
so,
heard that before.
No.
So I'm flying home on this fabulous airline called Frontier. And I had my doubts because when I went online and saw that there was finally a direct flight between Raleigh-Durham Airport and Portland, Maine. Everything so far has been, you know, change planes in New York or Boston. New York, of course, is always a thrill to change planes in LaGuardia or Kennedy. But here was a nonstop flight between my home airport, our home airport, and Portland, Maine, which is the closest to where son Winston and wife Leah and their five children live. And not only was it nonstop, but it was $91 round trip. And I thought, well, maybe they expect you to fly the plane yourself. But it wasn't the case at all. It was fabulous. Now, granted, they make their money by charging for if you want your own, you know, if you want to reserve your seat, if you have a carry-on or a check bag, that's extra as well. And that can mount up. But if you just want to get from point A to point B with your pocketbook, you can't beat it. And the planes were brand new. The crew was phenomenal. We arrived 45 minutes early. And then when we got back to Raleigh, we arrived an hour and 15 minutes early. The plane was able to take off 45 minutes early.
Because everybody was there.
Everybody was on board. And so when I did have a checked bag. And so I decided I would not call Johnny, who was going to pick me up, until I got to the curb. And not only did I get to the curbside with no hassle whatsoever, my bags came right off of the baggage claim. But when I got to the curbside and phoned Johnny, he said, "Well, I'm just pulling up to the airport now." I waited all of 2 minutes, and there he was in this flashy red truck in all his glory.
I love it.
And we took off into the sunset. So Johnny, I did not have a chance to ride in the truck until then. And, of course, whenever Johnny and I ride together,
that's not true. You rode up to the airport in it.
Did I?
Yeah.
Early.
You slept most of it.
That's why I don't remember, because it was it was 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, we got up at 3:30 to leave at 4 something to get there by 6 for an 8 o'clock flight, but that's okay.
Mm. But I did not have a chance to drive it much because, as always, whenever Johnny and I drive together, he has to be the one behind the wheel.
Yes, because Lori's driving.
And that's the end of this conversation.
Lori's driving drives me crazy. We ought to name a show after that.
Yeah, well,
plus she loves to help me drive. Get ready. You need to get in that lane. You need to move right. Move right. You know, that kind of thing. So. I wonder how many other husbands in the world deal with this kind of help when they're driving. So
Johnny has threatened
I think that's everywhere. You know, because I think women have a better sense spatially of things, you know, so they think that we're challenged, and we probably are. We just don't want to admit to it.
Johnny,
you're right, and I won't admit to it.
The only time Johnny has ever lost his temper with me is when I've kindly tried to explain to him directions.
Yeah.
You know, he's no Kit Carson. Thank God for GPS. But the fact is that he has promised me my own steering wheel and brakes on the shotgun side of the passenger side of the cab so that I can drive driving, you know, make-believe. But he hasn't done that yet, and the day he does will be a very sad day. So anyway, I did not have a chance really to drive this truck but once, and that was yesterday. And now we will have a beautiful Jeep to talk about next week because it was the changeover in cars. So, Johnny, tell everybody about what you thought about this wonderful truck.
Two or three things that really stood out about the truck. And Lori's right. I did get a lot of seat time because it's about an hour and 15 minutes to the Raleigh airport from our house. So, and I made two round trips. So that's two and a half. That's about, 5 hours that I spent driving the truck back and forth. Plus, I drove it around here and took our grandson to school and picked him up and did all those kinds of things. So I did get to spend some significant seat time in the truck, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot for two or three reasons. One, it has a running board. It's a big truck, four doors, full-size bed. Takes a 40-acre field to turn it around. Four-wheel drive, didn't need it, but it had those kinds of things. I'll talk more about that. But easy to get into. Once you got in it, got buckled up, it was very quiet, especially on the highway. Didn't really hear a lot of road noise, did not hear a lot of engine noise. Very comfortable truck to drive, very adjustable for the driver as far as the seating up, back, you know, the steering wheel. Once you adjusted it, it was just a pleasure to drive. It got pretty good gas mileage, and it must have a huge tank, because I think it gets I'll tell you what it's supposed to get. Yeah, 20 miles to the gallon, and that's about what it got. It was about 20 miles to the gallon, which is the average.
That's
19 around town, 19 around town, 22 on the road, and that's about what I got. And when we get them, they're filled up. And this one had almost a 500 mile range, so it's got to have a 25 gallon tank. Roughly, so it's got a big gas tank. When you fill it up, you're going to know it. But it has a long range. It was set up for towing, hauling, those kinds of things. It had the bed liners. You remember how bed liners used to be an add-on thing? You remember that? First, they used to be drop-in. It was just a kind of a. They were made to fit certain truck bodies, and they just sort of dropped it in into the back of your truck. That's another story. I had a Nissan and had one of those, and it almost flew out the back of the truck, so which was interesting. But then they went to the ones that were sprayed in liners that were really good, and basically the car companies just took all that stuff over and started doing it themselves.
Yeah.
So somebody made some money doing it for a while, and then someone who owned those companies made some money when the car companies bought them out. But he had all the really good coverage on the bed of the truck. These are little things, but they're things that you notice when you mess around with trucks. It had a push button for the I'm having a senior moment. The push button for the tailgate. You just push the button, and the tailgate let itself down, okay? Very smooth.
Nice.
When you went to, you know, a lot of times tailgates weigh something when you push them. They're heavy and all that. This one you can push up with one finger. It was really, it was a balanced thing that they had done. So it let itself down, and then when you went to close it, you just pushed it. Basically, it was so simple. A child could close this thing. And really nice.
I want to ask you before you go on, the bed of the truck, because that's really very important, isn't it? Especially if you're pulling a lot of heavy-duty stuff.
I don't care if you're just hauling natural stuff. I'm sorry.
Right. How do you test the quality of the bed, or is that just an understood and they're like it's like standard throughout the industry?
I think it's pretty much standard throughout the industry now. The ones that we see that are like the spray-on liner, it's sort of like a thick, rubbery type of thing, and it's slightly rough so that it sort of holds things in place. If you've got something with a really smooth bottom, it will slide on the thing. But other than that, it's sort of the things sort of really not stick, but they fit in very nicely. And it also has the braces, the types of thing you can hook up straps and hold things in place.
Oh, great.
You know, they've taken all that into consideration. But I think that's good. It also, this one had the bumper, had a built-in step. It's basically a cutout in the corners of the rear bumper so that you just put your foot into that space and step right up into the back of the truck.
Oh, great.
That was good. As to the quality of the thing, you've seen commercials about them dropping these heavy things in and what it does to various bodies that are in the back of the truck. This lining, I think these types of linings prevent a lot of that. I'm glad to see them make it standard on most all of the big trucks now, because it doesn't matter what you're carrying. It doesn't have to be a heavy load. It could be junk that you're taking to the dump, or it could be furniture.
Yeah.
And you know how furniture wants to slide around, especially if you're setting like a couch in and it's got legs. But this actually helps hold the thing in place, and then with the strapping, it's easy to secure things. And then you don't scratch up the back of your truck when you are moving things or hauling things or carrying. And there is a pride, I think, anymore to owning whatever the vehicle is that you own. And I certainly think there's a pride among truck owners, even the ones that use them commercially. You know, they still have the pride of ownership. This truck, by the way, starts at $40,000, which I think is pretty good. And then it had a lot of options on it. It had a convenience package. I can talk about that. And it had lots of things in the convenience package, which totaled about $7,600. So the total after the destination charge was $1,500, but the total was $49,000. So just shy of $50,000, which seems not unreasonable today for a quality vehicle that's going to last a long time. And this one had the 2.7 liter turbo. The things I liked about it, you know, almost all of them anymore have caught on. There's a 3-year, 36,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty.
Honey, let me interrupt.
Please.
What this truck did not have, which really surprised me, was a GPS system.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, I'm with you.
And that bothers me when you spend that kind of money on a vehicle. You know, a GPS system at the end of the day is not that much of an extra, even offered as an extra. I didn't see it on the cheat sheet, but a GPS system, especially on a truck, I think is really important. And there was not one. We had to, you know, bring in our own little portable one in order to travel around. And I find that if you're going to charge that kind of money for any vehicle, you should at least have that.
Well, and I agree with you, especially since we had XM radio, for example. You know, it isn't they were skipping on certain things, because we had that. We had the big monitor. We had an 8-inch high-definition color touchscreen, voice recognition, which I generally hook my phone up to the vehicles that we get for two reasons. One, I want to see how difficult it is to hook up your phone. Some of them you need a master's degree. Some of them are very intuitive. you push a button and it goes out, you know, your phone recognizes it. Mm. It says, does this code match? And you go, yes, you click, and it hooks it up. And that was like this. This one talked about the voice recognition. The last one we had, I think it might have been the Titan, but I would say call, you know, hit the little symbol that looks like a person speaking, and it would say, what would you like to do? And you say things like, call Hezieris. And there's a pause, and then it says calling Hezieris. Well, in the last one we had, I would say, call Tim Morgan. And it would come back and say, call Tim Moore. Now, and then you have to stop it and go through the whole thing again. And it just didn't really recognize all the time what you were saying. On this Chevrolet, I never had a pause. I never had one problem. I would say, call Tim Morgan. And it's the quality of the listening device and then the programming of it. There'd be maybe a 2-second pause, and it would say, calling Tim Morgan. So it understood. Right. Listen, I just, you know, how it does all those, I don't know. But the fact that it could recognize what you were saying, it understood different syllables. I have a friend named Tim St. Germain. And when I try to call him on my GPS or my phone system on my truck, it calls him Tim St. Germain. If I don't say Tim S.D. Germain, it struggles to know what I'm talking about. This one I said, call Tim St. Germain, and it comes back and says, calling Tim St. Germain. So it even understood the abbreviations for things. And listen, those are little steps, but yet they're pretty interesting if you spend a lot of time in a vehicle and you use your phone, which when I used to travel up and down from Florida, I used it a lot, so...
I got to ask you one question, because the trucks are just absolutely stunning. You know, they're workhorses, but the interior is so luxurious. I remember there was a time when you would only find limousines coming up in front of Lincoln Center. But in the last 10 years, I've been noticing trucks even showing up, you know, and dropping people off, you know, dropping the wife off or the girlfriend or whatever, and or friends. And then they park it, and it's like a breath of fresh air. So can you take this thing to Lincoln Center? Would you be comfortable with that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, my God. That's great.
Yeah, it's a style
thing. Well, I don't think I would not be comfortable with it, because you need to get two parking spaces in a garage.
Well, in cowboy
truck.
Boots.
Oh.
You know, and a lot of garages have a lot of difficulty parking. You can't even clear the clearance if you go into an underground garage with a truck like this one.
That's
and we
true.
Couldn't even fit it in the other half of our garage when we had it, could we, Johnny?
No, but we have things in the front of the garage, and there's also shelves and stuff, and it was too long to fit into the garage.
The other thing is this, honey. The passenger seat had manual seat adjustments.
While the driver's side has electric.
Yeah. So again, you know, for a $50,000 vehicle, I mean, how much skin is it off the manufacturer's teeth to do the, you know, electronic, you know, electrical seat adjustment on the passenger side? Because
it's just
difficult.
Replicating the same thing on. Yeah, it's replication.
Honey, you've got the Maroni. What are they saying are extras in this truck?
Well, there's actually quite a bit of them. And
how much do they come to?
I said that earlier, about $7,620.
Yeah.
And it has a convenience package, and that's the dual zone climate control, the seat adjuster. The driver has a 10-way power, including lumbar, seating, heated driver and front passenger, so you got heated seats. Front under seat storage. The steering wheel is heated. I noticed that. The steering column is tilt and telescoping. Most of them are like that anymore. Second row, this is a neat feature, second row USB ports. There's a lot of USB ports now on these vehicles where you can plug in your phone to charge it, plug in a laptop computer, those kinds of things, which I think is good. Rear window defogger. This is all part of this convenience package. Rear window defogger, power outlet, 12-volt, keyless open and start, steering wheel leather wrapped, steering column lock control electrical, remote vehicle start, theft deterrent, like that a lot, I think that's very important anymore, the tailgate with lift assist, power lock and release, LED Durabed lighting convenience package was $920 for the LED lighting, universal home remote, power sliding rear window with rear defogger, 120-volt power outlet, 120-volt power outlet in the bed. There's one in the truck.
Oh, wow.
Where you, that driver is. There is also one in the bed. The infotainment 3+8 diagonal 8-inch color touchscreen voice recognition. We talked about that. Two USB ports and an SD card reader in the front. Sirius XM radio. High definition radio, very good sound system.
These are extras?
Yeah, this is all part of the extra.
And how much was the extra package?
The whole thing. Now, each one is different. I just did the $920 one. Then there's a safety package, which is the front and rear park assist, lane change, side blind zone alert, rear cross traffic, that's $890. Then the leather package, which was your leather front seating surface, is $760. And then the black tubular assist steps, those must be the ones in the back, those are $725.
So can you do the math? How much are the extras packages?
Honey?
Altogether, yeah, you're still going?
Under 8 grand.
Yes, but yeah, it's $7,600.
And so the base price
so
of this,
the whole thing comes out to under $49,000.
Right, well, $40,000 to start with, and about $47,000 with the options, and then about $1,500 destination charge. So the whole thing's $49,000.
I'll tell you, the car manufacturers these days that are including all these safety features as part of the MSRP.
I think it's a very good sales thing.
You know,
they do it that
way. I love these people. It's so important, and to have safety features as extras to choose from, I find that very difficult. I think that especially a truck where it's a larger vehicle to maneuver, especially in cities and suburbs, that the safety options should not be options. They should be integral to the vehicle and to the base price. Leather and things like that I can understand, but not safety.
Yeah, you're right about that. But in America, we used to always have these add-ons, whereas the Europeans had like one vehicle, and that was it. But now everybody seems to be including that. There are options that they, I guess, to make it more affordable for some people. You know, some people don't want those extras because they can't afford $50,000, but they can't afford $42,000. It's just.
But I wonder. I'm wondering about this.
You're right. I like it your way. I like it your way. I'd rather just know that that's the cost of the vehicle and I feel safe and secure.
But, let me ask you this. If you had a pencil pusher, do an overview of what vehicles are manufactured in what configurations and what models, what models it's offered.
Right.
The manufacturer presents all these things, manufactures all these different, trucks in these various different models, sends them out to the dealers, and then at the end of the day, the dealer is, cutting the price because they didn't sell by season's end. Really, when you stop and think about it, they, in the overall picture, aren't they losing money to taking educated guesses, however educated they may be, as to what will sell and what will not sell, because we're coming on end of season now before the new 2020 introductions come in. And you see so many deeply discounted vehicles simply because, the guesstimates didn't really jive. It seems to me that the cars that we're seeing less of these days that are being discounted at the end of a model season, at the end of a model year, are fewer when the vehicle offers, this is the vehicle, there's one or no options, it's in your price. It seems to me that when you take something and have all these various offerings and all these various options, let's just say that we had the option to have a GPS system and we had the truck that we drove last week. We would not buy that truck because we would want the GPS system. So what happens
even
to that truck?
Even though we live in Pinehurst and hardly ever use the GPS system for anything around here or even going to Raleigh. But we do use it when we go to Raleigh or Charlotte or some of those kinds of places. But, you know, for the people that only drive in the local area or they get the service to take them to the airport, they don't need GPS.
You know, sometimes when you're offered too many choices, at the end of things, you buy nothing.
You walk out.
Because you're overwhelmed.
Yes, right. No, I agree with that.
And I do believe that these manufacturers that are saying, okay, here's the vehicle, this is the model, this is the price, you know, and it's one price, I believe that they're going to sell far more cars than offering a vehicle that has all these various options because you're giving too many choices to the ultimate buyer.
Well, I think as a reviewer, as car reviewers, which you and I are, I would agree with you because who do we praise the most? We praise the most the vehicles that cost, pick a number, $50,000 like this one. We praise those vehicles at $50,000 that already have all of the safety equipment, that already have all of the comfort equipment, that already have taken the passengers in the back seat into consideration. Those are the ones that we really praise. And I think that's the attitude of the general public. A lot of the cars that are left over at the end of the year are probably those that don't have a lot of things.
And the reason why is because of this. The individual car buyer who's going out to buy a certain car that wants to have the GPS system probably also wants to have the luxury seating, probably most definitely wants to have the safety measures.
I think everybody would want safety measures.
Yeah,
I don't know about luxury seats and that, but I just can't imagine that somebody buying any new vehicle would not be interested in what safety features are on this vehicle.
I think people are expecting the safety features nowadays more than ever before. Not 10 years ago or 5 years ago, but now it's like expected.
I hate to prophesy the situation, but I sure would hate to see somebody buy a vehicle where a safety package was an option, and they didn't buy it because they said, well, it's going to cost that much less, and then they live to regret it. You know what I'm saying?
Let me say something. I want to go back to positive things about the vehicle. Do you remember when we had the Chevy Camaro? We actually had a Camaro and a Mustang.
Yeah, that was the week that was.
Yeah, and the Camaro, if you'll remember me talking about it, but it looks like a beast when you look at the front of it. I mean, it is a very aggressive-looking styling. This Chevrolet truck is very similar. It does not have, of course, the low windshield like it did on the Camaro. But you look at the front of this truck and the way that the headlights are, it's a very aggressive, almost menacing look when you look at the front of the truck. I like it. I think it's very powerful.
I like it very much, too.
Yeah. I just think it's a good statement. Yeah, I agree with you, dude. And the other thing I was going to say about the truck Lori was talking about all the safety features and all these other things and stuff. The way that it came, the only thing I would say was that it did need GPS. Other than that, I thought this truck, the space-wise, everything about it, heating-wise, gas-wise, all that, plenty of power, plenty of pickup, right-size wheels, really good looks, all that kind of thing. It's a $50,000 truck. It's a $50,000 truck, and I think that that's fair price for something that quality. The other thing, maybe the last thing, but the other thing is if you watch those Chevrolet commercials, if you actually watch them, they're quite good. Where Chevrolet has, you know, been voted the best in these classes, and it just keeps talking about this model and this model. So they've done their homework, and they are producing really quality vehicles, or they wouldn't be winning those kinds of things. So I think, you know, that says a lot about it, too.
I think the American industry, and certainly in the automotive industry, they've done a phenomenal transformative change. They're really cutting edge now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to close this riveting half hour.
What are you going to do, sing?
No, I'm not. I'm going to tell our listeners to have a good week, but also to say that next Thursday we'll be talking about the 2019 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited Sahara 4x4, which we just received yesterday, and it's a wonderful, wonderful car. So,
Tell them the color.
The color is this.
Red.
I don't have it. It's ocean blue metallic clear coat exterior paint with a black tan interior, but and leather trim seats with
beautiful
the Sahara logo. It
it's
is this blue, this ocean blue that they're calling it is like it should be called Pacific blue or Mediterranean blue because it's this wonderful kind of sapphire blue. But it's a great if you're a Jeep lover, you're going to want to hear our review next week. So stay tuned. And on that happy note, is our time up?
Unfortunately, it is. But what about the Atlantic? I mean, does it look like it might be Atlantic water, ocean blue? No,
No.
It's darker.
No.
It's Mediterranean.
This is
specifically
brighter.
The Pacific on the western side of the Hawaiian chain, more around Midway Atoll. That's that blue.
Oh, I like that.
That blue.
I like that. Okay.
In the lagoon,
that's where
not
we
outside.
Should be driving it.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you next week. Everybody have
a great week.
God bless
right.
you.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
How exciting. Oh, it's always so exciting to talk about cars and life, of course, with none other than John and Lori Wiles. And we miss Wynn. Unfortunately, he won't be able. He wasn't able to show up today. So hopefully next week everything will be cool, calm, and collected. Well, we have a couple of moments. Let's first find out what's going on in the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be right back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
And there's another number for the Yonkers Tribune. Should you care to reach out to them, their office number, their cell number, their text number, their voicemail number is 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. Well, a lot's going on nationally as well as internationally, and I guess one of the first things to know is that the U.S. Senate panel has subpoenaed Donald Trump Jr. With respect to the Russia interference probe. So it seems the Russia probe plunged Washington into turmoil yesterday as Donald Trump's son reportedly was ordered to testify before a Senate panel, and the White House refused to release material on investigations into the president. So a day after the top Republican in Congress called the Russia probe case closed, Trump's conflict with his Democratic opponents escalated to new heights as a House panel voted to hold the nation's Attorney General, Bill Barr, in contempt for refusing to turn over key documents. So following a day of drama that included Trump asserting executive privilege for the first time in his presidency, the Republican-led Senate Intelligence Committee took the surprise step of issuing a subpoena to Donald Trump Jr. to testify as part of its investigation into Russian election interference. That's what the U.S. media had reported. Well, it was the first known legal summons issued to a member of the president's family to force testimony in the ongoing investigation and comes after special counsel Robert Mueller declined to refuse or to accuse, rather, Trump's 2016 campaign of criminal conspiracy to collude with the Russians. Trump Jr., who's 41, has testified voluntarily in private once to the committee and was peppered with questions about a June 9, 2016 meeting at Trump Tower in New York
that he and other campaign officials had with a Russian lawyer who had offered them dirt on Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Now, committee aides would not confirm the subpoena or what they want to discuss with the president's eldest son, who currently helps run the Trump Organization. Now, citing a person close to Trump Jr., the Wall Street Journal reported he had offered to answer questions in writing from the committee and planned to fight the subpoena, which demands he testify in person. The White House has been seeking to shield at large, a large swath of material, including redacted portions of Mueller's report subpoenaed by lawmakers seeking to exert their oversight responsibility. The rare move to invoke executive privilege came as the House Judiciary Committee took its most substantive step yet against a member of the Trump administration by approving a contempt motion against Barr. This was a very grave and momentous step we were forced to take today, Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler said after the party line vote. Nadler said the contempt citation will proceed, quote, rapidly, end quote, for a full House vote, but did not offer a timeline. He accused Trump and the White House of stonewalling by preventing America's congressional representatives from conducting oversight of the executive branch. It's an attack on the essence of our democracy, Nadler said. We are now in a constitutional crisis, end quote. The Department of Justice swiftly shot back, branding the contempt vote, quote, inappropriate political theatrics, end quote. Hours earlier, Trump made clear he would assert his executive privilege to keep Mueller's full report under wraps. Quote, neither the White House nor Attorney General Barr will comply with Chairman Nadler's unlawful and reckless demands, end quote, the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said. Assistant Attorney General Stephen Boyd stressed that Trump had moved to keep, quote, the entirety of the subpoenaed materials, end quote, from the eyes of Congress. Nadler warned that such action represents a clear escalation in the Trump administration's blanket defiance of Congress's constitutionally mandated duties, end quote. Democrats have struggled with their battle plan in the wake of the Mueller report, and some have called for impeachment proceedings against Trump, while others stress the need to refocus on issues affecting everyday Americans ahead of the 2020 election. And Trump claimed the document exonerated him of a wrongdoing. On the question of obstruction of justice, the report did not conclude Trump committed a crime, but Mueller wrote that, quote, it does not exonerate him, end quote. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Trump's nemesis in Congress, has refrained from calling for his impeachment. But on Wednesday, she voiced support for the contempt move and delivered a stinging message about the White House refusal to release the unredacted report. Quote, is this what it looks like when you have nothing to hide, end quote, Pelosi tweeted. So for several hours in the tense judiciary hearing, lawmakers traded barbs about Barr's brazen protection of the president and the calculated effort by Democrats to punish him and gain access to key material. Addressing a rally of supporters in Florida on Wednesday night, Trump defended his attorney general as, quote, great, and said that after Mueller's two-year probe found nothing, the Democrats were not finished. You know, it was going to be like we want the Mueller report. Now they say Mueller report. No, we want to start all over again. It is a disgrace. Barr defied a subpoena to turn over a complete copy of Mueller's report and the underlying evidence. And last week, refused to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. The panel approved the 27-page contempt citation in which Nadler wrote that even the redacted report, quote, offers disturbing evidence and analysis that President Trump engaged in obstruction of justice at the highest levels, end quote. My God, this is heavy-duty stuff. It's all coming to a head. I don't know how far this can go, but this is unnerving, to say the least. Well, let's just look and see what else is going on the world stage, because a lot is happening. One thing, Trump has tightened the Iran sanctions as France warns against escalation. it seems that U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday ordered new sanctions on Iran, this time targeting its industrial metals sector, hours after Tehran said it would no longer fully comply with a landmark nuclear deal already ditched by Washington. The announcement was made on the anniversary of the Trump administration's unilateral withdrawal from the 2015 agreement between Tehran and world powers, under which the Islamic Republic agreed to curb its nuclear program in exchange for easing some sanctions. It came just hours after Tehran said it would no longer fully comply with the accord if its remaining signatories, Britain, France, Germany, China, and Russia, did not make good on promises to shield its oil and banking sector from U.S. sanctions. Responding to Iran's announcement, France's foreign secretary expressed its concern, quote-unquote, and urged Tehran to avoid any action that, quote, might fuel an escalation, end quote. France, quote, strongly calls on Iran to continue to respect all of its nuclear obligations, end quote, a spokesman for the ministry added. And tensions were already high between Washington and Tehran when the Trump administration said last weekend that it was deploying a carrier strike group and bombers to the Middle East in response to what it said were troubling indications and warnings from Iran. And before Trump's executive order for the sanctions, a senior White House official said that Washington would impose more economic curbs on Tehran, quote, very soon, end quote, and had warned Europe to stop doing business with the Islamic Republic. Today's action targets Iran's revenue from the export of industrial metals, 10% of its export economy, and puts other nations on notice that allowing Iranian steel and other metals into your ports will no longer be tolerated, Trump said in a statement. Now, Tehran can expect further actions unless it fundamentally alters its conduct, the U.S. president added. Under the landmark deal agreed by Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama, the six parties to the agreement were supposed to lift nuclear-related sanctions on Iran in return for its reining in its nuclear activities to ease fears it was seeking the capability to produce an atomic bomb. UN inspectors say that Iran has continued to comply with the deal after the U.S. withdrawal. But the promised sanctions relief has failed to materialize as European and Asian banks and oil companies have moved swiftly to abide by the renewed U.S. Sanctions for fear of financial or commercial repercussions. Now, spearheaded by National Security Advisor John Bolton, the Trump administration has taken several unprecedented steps to squeeze Iran, such as demanding the world halt all Iranian oil imports and designating Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard Corps as a foreign terrorist organization, which Iran has cast as an American provocation. We have made our focus diplomatic isolation and economic pressure, and that policy is working, Brian Hook, special envoy for Iran, said in a briefing. Hook said that more nations now, compared with a year ago, were in agreement with the United States on Iran. However, world powers, including Washington's European allies, have been critical of the U.S. decision to withdraw from the nuclear deal. On Wednesday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov blamed Washington's, quote, irresponsible behavior, end quote, for the, quote, fragile, end quote, state of the nuclear deal and called on European signatories to help resolve the situation. Quote, I believe the only practical steps that need to be taken in order to resolve the situation is to convince all remaining participants to fulfill their obligations, Lavrov had said. China's foreign ministry has warned that, quote, maintaining and implementing the comprehensive agreement is the shared responsibility of all parties. China, quote, resolutely opposes, end quote, unilateral U.S. sanctions against Iran, the ministry added. There was further criticism at home, with leading Democratic lawmakers such as Chris Murphy, the top Democrat on the Senate's Middle East subcommittee, accusing Trump's administration of making America less safe through its policies. Well, so that was what was happening there, and very compelling, to say the least, which is unbelievable. Now, I wanted to check just some other things. Bear with me a second. All right, I want to move 1 second here. Bear with me a moment. I want to cover what else has been happening. This is really quite important. with respect to the papal see, the Pope has passed a legal decree requiring priests and nuns to report sex abuse. Pope Francis today passed a measure to oblige those who know about sex abuse in the Catholic Church to report it to their superiors following a global clerical pedophilia scandal. Every diocese in the world will now be obliged to have a system for the reporting of abuse under a new law published by the Vatican under the requirement will not apply to secrets revealed to priests in the confessional. So it is time to learn from the bitter lessons of the past, Francis said in the text of the legal decree. It follows a series of clerical assault cases in countries ranging from Australia to Chile, Germany, and the United States. The motu proprio, a legal document issued under the Pope's personal authority, declares that anyone who has knowledge of abuse or suspects it is, quote, obliged to report it promptly, end quote, to the Church using easily accessible systems. Though this obligation was formerly left up to individual consciences, it now becomes a universally established legal precept within the Church, said Andrea Tornielli, the director of the Vatican's communications department. The law only applies within the Church and has no force to oblige individuals to report abuse to civil authorities. Under the new measure, every diocese around the world is obliged by June of 2020 to reach a system or to create a system for the reporting of sexual abuse by clerics and use of child pornography and cover-ups of abuse. Well, the document focuses particularly on the sexual and psychological abuse of children and vulnerable adults, but also targets sexual abuse and violence resulting from an abuse of authority, such as an exploitation of nuns by priests. Pope Francis admitted publicly in February that priests have used nuns as, quote, sexual slaves, end quote, and may still be doing so. Victims groups have long called for Francis to put in place concrete measures to tackle clerical child abuse, including immediately firing any cleric found guilty of even a single act of abuse or of covering it up. They also want all abusers or suspected abusers to be reported to police and any abuse-related files handed over to them. So some have called for priests who hear of abuse during confession to be forced to report it. The new law stops short of that. Catholics believe that within the confessional, the penitent is talking to God, and everything in the confession is secret. A priest who reveals such secrets is automatically expelled from the Church. The new law follows a historic Vatican summit on child sexual abuse by priests in February, which saw much self-recrimination by the Church and horror stories from abuse survivors. Unbelievable amount of news, that is for sure. want to check something else out. And this is important. Evidently, the European Union is planning for life after Brexit and the tussle for top jobs at a special summit that took place. European leaders met in Transylvania today to launch a scramble for the top jobs in Brussels and sketch a future without Britain, the ghost in their summit feast. Just 2 weeks before European Parliament elections, that could usher in a new wave of populists who haunt European Union decision makers. The 27 national leaders will meet in Sibiu, Romania. The 28 head of government, Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May, will not be there as the others discuss a five-year strategy to reinvigorate their union and argue over who should lead it. Senior Brussels officials admit that there may be some sharp disagreements, but there is a sense of relief that at least Britain's tortuous exit from the bloc will not dominate their discussions. If they stay, they stay. If they go, shrugs Jean-Claude Juncker, who is due to leave his post as president of the European Commission before the end of the year once his successor is chosen. A senior European official involved in drawing up the Sibiu agenda agreed, telling reporters, quote, this is a Brexit-free summit and everybody is relieved, end quote. The meeting symbolically arranged for May 9 to mark the anniversary of Robert Schuman's 1950 call for the coal and steel union that preceded today's European Union will seek to agree a CBU declaration. This will be a short document with 10 overreaching commitments to reform in various areas, known tongue-in-cheek by some Brussels diplomat as the Ten Commandments, end quote, end quote, for the European Union Commission. There will also be an outline, a strategic agenda, end quote, end quote, prepared by European Union Council President and summit host Donald Tusk, which will be discussed in more detail so that the leaders can ratify the plan at their June summit. Quote, this is quite a challenge to agree 2 weeks before the European Parliament elections, end quote, the official admitted, noting that the leaders also represent the warring conservative, socialist, liberal, and populist camps vying for seats in the European Parliament later this month. And many of the leaders have their own priorities. France's President Emmanuel Macron is pushing an ambitious environmental agenda, while Hungary's Viktor Orbán is feuding with his colleagues over immigration. It's never been seen as a summit for epic decisions, but on the road from Sibiu, the leaders will define a new strategic agenda for the European Union until 2024, the senior European official told reporters. The other main issue on the table and which has gripped discussions in the Brussels corridors of power is the five-yearly renewal of the top European Union jobs. Immediately after the May 23 to 26 parliamentary elections, leaders will begin haggling over who gets to lead the European Commission, the bloc's executives, and the European Council, which represent national leaders. They will also have an eye on the presidency of the European Central Bank and plumb Brussels' roles, such as that of High Representative for Foreign Policy. 5 years ago, it took 3 months and three summits to dole out the jobs in an opaque diplomatic process, and Tusk hopes to accelerate matters this time by laying down the ground rules in Sibiu on Thursday. Juncker's replacement at the Commission will be the most difficult to agree amid a tug of war between the Brussels institutions and the member states over the candidacy process. Political groups in the European Parliament have chosen so-called Spitzenkandidaten, or leading candidates, to head of their campaign, and many want the eventual head of the biggest faction that emerges from the poll to get the top job. The European Union Treaty, however, states that member states' leaders must agree on a candidate after appropriate consultations and that only afterwards will he or she be approved by the incoming parliament. It is now widely expected that Tusk will announce on Thursday in Sibiu a plan to hold an extraordinary European Union summit on May 28, 2 days after the elections, to start the process of deciding on a candidate. An EU or European Union official told Agence France-Presse in Brussels that they expect some leaders, such as Macron, to use this meeting to try to kill the Spitzenkandidat and take charge of the process. But Juncker, the former Luxembourg premier, who was himself appointed after being the candidate of the conservative EPP grouping, dismissed the leaders' efforts to sideline parliament. They tried to do it last time and they won't succeed next time, he said on Tuesday. So, very, very compelling news to say the least. And so it is. Now, let's quickly go over to Asia. Bear with me a moment and see what's happening there, because a lot of stuff is happening there. You remember, 1 second. You remember a woman by the name of Asia Bibi? She's a Christian woman in a row over blasphemy, and she's decided to leave Pakistan. Asia Bibi, the Christian woman at the center of a decade-long blasphemy row, has left Pakistan, a senior government source advised Agence France-Presse on Wednesday, months after her death sentence was overturned because of mass protests by Islamist hardliners. Her departure is the latest chapter in a saga that has sparked violent demonstrations and high-profile assassinations while spotlighting religious extremism across the wide section of Pakistani society. Asia Bibi has left Pakistan of her own free will, the government source told Agence France-Presse, speaking on condition of anonymity. It's not clear when Bibi may have left or when she may have gone or where she may have gone. Her lawyer, Saif Ul-Mulok, said he had not spoken to Bibi directly, but understood from sources that she was in Canada, where her daughters are believed to have already fled. There was no immediate announcement from Pakistan officials or the Canadian High Commission in Islamabad. It's a great relief that this shameful ordeal has finally come to an end, and Asia Bibi and her family are safe, said Omar Warayich, Deputy South Asia Director at Amnesty International. She should never have been imprisoned in the first place, let alone endure the constant threats to her life. This case horrifyingly illustrates the dangers of Pakistan's blasphemy laws and the urgent need to repeal them, end quote. Blasphemy carries a maximum death penalty under Pakistan's penal code. It is an incendiary issue in the Muslim-majority country, and mere allegations of insulting Islam have sparked lynchings and vigilante violence in the past. Bibi, a laborer from central Punjab province, was first convicted of blasphemy in 2010 and was on death row until her acquittal last year. Her case swiftly became the most infamous in Pakistan, drawing worldwide attention to extremism in the country. She has technically been free to leave Pakistan since January, when the Supreme Court dismissed a legal challenge to her acquittal in October. Since then, Bibi has been widely believed to have been held in protective custody by authorities as she awaited an asylum deal in a third country. Many blasphemy cases in Pakistan see Muslims accusing Muslims, but rights activists have warned that religious minorities, particularly Christians, are often caught in the crossfire with such accusations used to settle personal scores. Two politicians have been assassinated in connection with Bibi's case, and she spent much of her time in prison in solitary confinement because of fear she would or could be attacked by a guard or another prisoner. Islamist groups have regularly called for her to be executed, and activists have warned that she would not be safe in Pakistan. Following Bibi's acquittal in October, the country was gripped for days by violent protests led by hardline group Tehreek-e-Labbaik, Pakistan TLP, which also called for mutiny in the armed forces and assassination of the country's top judges for acquitting her. In the wake of the nationwide protests, TLP's leaders, who paralyzed the capital of Islamabad for weeks in 2017 with an anti-blasphemy sit-in, were rounded up in a government crackdown months ago and remain in detention. Now, Christians, who make up around 2% of the population, occupy one of the lowest rungs in class-obsessed Pakistani society, largely living in slums and working menial jobs as street sweepers, cleaners, and cooks. Unbelievable what goes on. And yet the world, you know, just looks askance, which is unbelievable. Ay, 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 ay. Now, let me just quickly look at some other things that might be of interest. Bear with me a moment. One second here. One more minute. All right. What I want to do is then go over to some other issues that we'll discuss with you now. Mm-hmm. Bear with me a moment. Okay. One second. One minute. One second. Where is it here? Oh, okay. I think I've got it now. One second. One minute here. I think here it is. All right. I just needed to check on some other things. Bear with me a moment. We'll try to get to this site. Okay. One moment here. All right. Nope. Bear with me a second, because I'm trying to see if there's something that I was missing. Possibly not. 1 minute. One more second. All right. This is really quite interesting, only because it seems to be intrusive, but who knows how this will all be taken. Evidently, the NYPD has a secret use of cell phone sweeping technology. It seems that scores of police departments across the country are quietly using a highly secretive technology developed for the military that can track the whereabouts of suspects by using the signals constantly emitted by their cell phones, including New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Las Vegas. So objection to the suitcase-sized devices known as stingrays or cell site simulators are increasingly growing amidst civil liberties and privacy groups. Stingrays or cell site simulators mimic cell towers and can sweep up cell phone data from an entire neighborhood. The cell phone users doesn't even have to make a call or send a text message. The police can still determine the location of a phone without the phone being in use, and some versions of the technology can even intercept texts and calls or pull information stored on the phones. Oh my God. Well, privacy experts say that part of the problem is the devices can also collect data from anyone within a small radius of the person being tracked. In most cases, law enforcement will go to great lengths to conceal usage by offering plea deals rather than divulging details on the stingray. Attorney Jerome Greco of Legal Aid Society said, "We can't even tell how frequently they're being used." Greco recently succeeded in blocking evidence collected with the device in a New York City murder case. It makes it very difficult. Those are the issues of the day, and I see it's 11 o'clock, so what we're going to do is we're going to end the day. I've got an early meeting today, which I hadn't expected, but it was concluded before 10 o'clock, so we're going to have to say goodbye, and we hope to see you tomorrow. Should be an exciting day. All the best. Take care. Goodbye.